We are holding on Memo Bay's ninth line from the end of a narrow line. So about, 15 or 20 lines from the end. The line begins Loma Catalyst. Hey, we talked yesterday about the whole business of shmarim, of dregs that are in oil or wine, particularly we talked about as far as oil, where Yehuda had said in the Mishnah that if you're selling somebody oil, he has to accept the dregs or he has to accept a discount where you're going to give him less oil than you promised. And the Tanakhama had said that not, and we went back and forth about the possibilities of that. Does that mean you're maybe allowed to mix in the dregs even after it's settled out, or are you maybe not allowed to?
Because it's sediment?
The sediment, yeah, the dregs, the sediment, whatever you want to call it, yeah. So now we're going to talk about a different kind of solus that you find in oil. The sediment is the stuff that falls to the bottom. Now we're going to be talking about something that's called pkatim, which Rashi explains it means the stuff that floats on the top, like the broken pieces of the olive pits or whatever that float to the top. There's a couple of other explanations among the Farshim what pkatim are among various Rishonim. The Rambam talks about that it's kind of the scummy oil, like the unclear oil that also he agrees it floats to the top like Rashi, but not like Rashi says the broken pieces of the seeds and of the kernels and whatnot, but rather you have like the lower quality oil. I guess maybe it's more foamy or whatever. Yeah, and then there's a third explanation that some of the Rishonim say that it means the stuff right on the bottom, right above the dregs, right above the sediment. You have, again, cloudy sort of oil over there. Okay, whatever it is. So, Tana, we learn in a Braisa. Echad alekeach ve'echad amaskid l'pkotim. The same rules apply as far as a buyer and as far as a maskid, as far as pkotim, as far as this solos or however exactly we define what pkotim are. So we have to ask, my l'pkotim, what do we mean? What's the comparison? In what's the comparison between a lekeach and a maskid? E lema ki hechad lekeach lema kabel pkatim maskid nami lema kabel pkatim. Are you going to say that it means when a person is buying oil, he may or may not have to accept the sediment, like we talked about yesterday, the shmarim, but he's not obligated to accept pkatim, and then the idea would be maskid nami lema kabel pkatim. So the same thing if you deposit oil for safekeeping by somebody else, then later on when you pick it up, you're not obligated to take back the pkatim. Well, why not? The shomer can tell him, "Kotach my eved little. What am I supposed to do with your pkatim? You gave me oil. You gave me a barrel of oil that had pkatim in it. You're expecting me to return it without the pkatim? What am I supposed to do with them?" So it can't mean that. Ella, no, it has to mean the other way around. It has to be the other way around. It has to mean the other way around. A maskid definitely has to accept them. Sure, if he gave oil that included pkatim, that included the stuff floating on the surface, sure, he's going to have to take back his oil with it. He can't say that you, the shomer, are responsible for getting rid of it. Well, by the same logic, then, the braisa is saying a lekeach also has to be willing to accept that. When he buys oil, he's going to have to know that there's going to be pkatim in it, that there may be pkatim in it. The question is, is that in fact the case? Does a lekeach in fact have to, is he obligated to accept katim? Again, shmarim, which is the stuff on the bottom we talked about yesterday. Here we're talking about the stuff on the top. Yeah. V'hatanya, we learn in a braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, loy omru shemen ocho elo lemoicha bovat. Rabbi Yehuda says that the chachamim only said that so Rashi explains what it means is the loss when you sell. When the loss about the cloudy oil is only for the seller. Because the buyer is, according to what we said yesterday, that Rabbi Hoda said, is already willing to accept that when he's buying 100 lug, which is supposed to be clear oil, he's only going to get 98.5 because you're going to subtract 1.5 for the shmarim. Therefore, Rashi explains, the point is, at that point, the 98.5 you give him has to be clear of cotton. Shmarim has already been deducted. Therefore, you have to be responsible to get rid of the pkatim before you give it to him. So therefore, this braisa is clearly saying that a lekeach is not obligated to take pkatim. So what are you telling me? That a maskid, just like a maskid, has to take them, so does a lekeach. Now, of course,
that shmarim, and both
we assume the usual amount of shmarim. No, the usual amount of shmarim is 1.5. In fact, there are Mepharshim who say that part of what the Gemara is saying over here is the assumption all this time has been the 1.5 only consists of shmarim. There are not supposed to be any pkatim in it. Therefore, what we're saying is the loss. Therefore, what we're saying is the loss of the 1.5, as far as Shmarim, that Rabbi Yehuda says, is acceptable. But the loss because of Pekatim, that the Moser has to eat that cost. That's to make sure that there was no Pekatim in there before he sells it. Tosfos discusses that a little bit and says, in that case, then why is the Braita saying anything about Shemen Ocher, about cloudy oil? Pekatim is not really cloudy oil, per se. You have this stuff floating on the surface. It's not really cloudy, per se. And so, therefore, Tosfos explains somewhat differently that if the seller, when he sells, according to the way we said in the Gemara yesterday, the seller would have a choice. He could either sell him clear oil and deduct 1.5 for the shmarim, or he could mix it up. He could remix all the sediment in there and sell it to him as full 100 lug. If he does it the first way, if he mixes it all together and gives him 400 lug, he himself is suffering a certain loss because he could have kept the shmarim for himself. Yesterday we discussed the shmarim of oil aren't really worth very much. Unlike the shmarim of wine, they're still worth something. You can use them for something. So that's what it means, in other words, that you can use them, for example, they're flammable. You can use them for like helping to start a fire or whatever. Or you can, whatever. For 98.5. No, so we were saying, what we were talking about, Rabbi Yehuda was saying yesterday, you're selling to somebody oil, you're selling him 100 lug of oil. You're being paid for 100 lug. Rabbi Yehuda had said you're entitled to give him only 98.5 and tell him you're getting clear oil and the 1.5 represents my profit, represents the shmorim, which you as a balabas don't want to take because you want clear oil. So then what we're saying over here is, on the other hand, if the mocher chooses not to do that and he chooses to mix in the shmarim, on the one hand, okay, then the other guy is getting full 100, and the mocher is going to be losing out because otherwise he could have kept the shmarim for himself. That's all it means. Yeah, well, his profit in that case, his choice would be that he doesn't want to bother making sure the oil is clear. He'll mix it all up and sell it. He'll mix it all up and sell it all mixed. But then he's losing out. The fact that he could have kept the shmarim and he's choosing not to. That's all. According to Tosfos, that's all the Braita is saying. But therefore, the implication is, Maharam Shif and others talk about the implication is still, according to this explanation of Tosfos, it comes out that the relevance of it is that we're saying the Kotim are out of the picture over here. You know, you're not expecting the Lekeach to take them. So how do you have a Braita that's saying that just like a Maskid has to take them, so does a Lekeach? And by the way, I mean, Rishonim point out, the Ritva points out, the Gemara could easily answer that the previous Braita that compared them is according to the Rabbanim, and the second Braita is according to Rabbi Yehuda. But they had the Kabbalah, the Amoraim had the Kabbalah, the first Braita is also according to Rabbi Yehuda, so therefore we have to reconcile. So the answer is Loikasha. There's two possibilities. You can have a person pays for the oil in Tishrei. In Tishrei, the oil has only just been pressed. Usually the oil at that time is cloudy, and usually there'll be shmarim mixed into it, there'll be kotim floating on it, it won't have yet settled out. So therefore, so if you're paying in Tishrei v'kashokim in Eben Nissen, committed to Tishrei. Later on, when you're picking up the oil, you're picking it up in Nissen, but still following the price of Tishrei. In that case, Tishrei time, there was still sediment in the oil, there was still kotim floating on the oil. In that case, you will have to take the kotim as well, because when you paid for it, you paid at a cheaper price, because that's when oil normally has kotim in it.
You accepted the price.
You accepted. You, the buyer, paid in Tishrei. You said basically, I want to buy it at a discount. So I'm paying you now in Tishrei when the prices are cheaper, and I will pick it up in Nissan. But by paying for it in Tishrei, he implies, and why am I paying the lower price? Because Tishrei time, that's when oil has cut in. Therefore, when it comes to Nissan, he can't say, well, by Nissan time, it's all settled out. No, but it is a lower price. He's paying to begin with a lower price because he's expecting to get oil with cut in. Therefore, he has to get oil with cut in. The other possibility, the second braisa which says that the lekeach cannot be obligated to take katim, is talking about when he paid the money in Nissen and picked it up in Nissen according to the Nissen prices, meaning he paid the higher price. By Nissen time, usually the oil has been sitting there in storage for 6 months since it was pressed. So by now the sediment has settled out, katim have all settled out, whatever, and therefore you can expect. Therefore, when you're buying oil at that point, it's going to be clear. So fine, shmarim at least, the guy's make a profit somehow. But kotim, he can expect
it not to. Let's say he pays in Nissan, and he wants to take delivery in Tishrei, Kenny and Tishri is expected to say, listen, I paid you the Nissan price, I need clear oil.
Well, in Tishrei, you're not going to get clear oil, practically speaking.
So are you going to pay for that?
Paid in Nissan. Fine. So in that case, well, the Gemara passed us and meant such a case because it wouldn't be, no sensible person would ever make such a deal. A person would not pay the higher prices in Nissan if he's going to pick up the oil in Tishrei, knowing that Tishrei time, all the oil is cloudy.
No, but that's the question. Can he make it?
He could make it whatever deal he wants, but no sensible person would make such a deal. So we're talking about the kind of deal sensible people would make.
Depends for who.
Yeah, okay. By the way, I mean, this business
is sensible for the
okay,
seller.
Fine. So we're talking about the buyer over here. The buyer is the one who sets the conditions of it. Okay. Yeah, I should mention also, and a couple of Rishonim, including the Rambam, hold that mida over here doesn't mean, like Rashi says, the payment doesn't mean the cost, the value per gallon or whatever, but rather it means the measurements, that the measurements they used in Nissan were actually larger than the ones they used in Tishrei. Similar idea, though.
Because of the
difference in sediment. Yeah. Okay. Mishnah says, "Hamaskid chobis etz chaver." If somebody deposited a barrel, wine, oil, or what have you, by somebody else, now the owner did not specifically designate a certain space for it. Meaning, he could have. Rashi says he could have, when he brought over the barrel, he could have said, "Please wash this barrel for me, and while you're at it, please lend me this particular corner where this barrel should remain over here." He didn't do that, let's say. The tiltala, now the shomer moved the barrel, v'nishtabra, and it broke. So, depends. Imitev yodin nishbara, if it broke while he was handling it, then it depends why he was handling it in the first place. Letzorkei chayev, if he was doing it for his own needs, namely in order to use it. The Gemara is going to talk about the possibilities of using it, for example, to climb on. That's one possibility. We're going to see in the Gemara about the possibilities that maybe to use it as in like to climb on, or we may be talking about to use it as in to use some of the wine or the oil in it, which would be shlichus yad, which is we're going to start talking about shlichus yad extensively in the Gemara. So anyway, so then he would be chayev. Then he would be chayev, because then effectively by doing that by moving it for his own needs, effectively he became a gazlan, and a gazlan is chayev in anything that happens. So the same just like we learned in Bava Kamma. But if he moved it for its needs, for example, let's say the corner where he had it before is a dangerous place, and therefore it's going to break over there, and therefore he's moving it to a safer spot, and on the way it broke, then he's potter, because then he was doing it as his responsibilities as a shomer.
How can he
be potter
when he has a pickup, regardless of
A shomer chinam is potter on gneva vaveda and oinus.
This is a
shomer chinam. Even if it's a shomer sacher, he's potter on oinus.
This is an oinus.
Doesn't matter, as long as he wasn't a shoyl. Regardless whether he's a maskid, it means that he was either a shema chinam or a shema sasa.
So then why do we have need within the mitzvah? Well, the mitzvah is that...
That's the point. There's a difference between letzorka and letzorka. Wait. Im mishi nicha mishpura, but if it only broke after he put it down, so he finished using it for whatever he was going to use it for, then he put it someplace safe, then bein letzorka. Bein letzorka, potter, then he would be potter regardless whether he moved it for his own purposes or whether he moved it in order to protect it. Either way, once it's out of his hands, he returned it. Effectively, he returned it to the owner. Therefore, at that point, he's potter. He's back to being a shomer, which is what we're going to discuss in the Gemara. Wait. Oh, not so obvious. You're going to see. Yichdu la b'ilam makim. Now, what about a different case? Suppose the owner specifically designated a specific spot for it in the house, and you moved it from there. The tiltala, you moved it from there, and nishbara, and it broke. Then, b'imitech yodo, b'imishin nicha. Then it doesn't matter whether it's in your hands or whether after you put it down someplace else. Letzorka chayev, letzorka potter. Either way, if you moved it because you wanted to use it, you chayev, because then you put it back in, then you didn't put it back in the place where he told you to put it. And letzorka, if you moved it because that place turned out to be not a safe place for it, then you're potter because, okay, you moved it for the sake of protecting the potter.
So if someone chooses one corner, it turns into being a dangerous place, not move it.
You can move it, and that's what we're saying, yeah. So you should move it, and if it breaks while you're moving it, then you're potter because you were doing it for the benefit of the thing.
If you don't, you'll pay up, presumably.
Maybe. I mean, not necessarily. You could argue that, especially if he told you to put it in a certain space, maybe it doesn't mean necessarily you have a specific obligation to move it, but okay, whatever. By the way, the Ramah, the tour brings that the Ramah, says, brings yet another possibility. What if you didn't move it neither Latsurka nor Latsurka, but because you needed that particular space?
That,
what? You needed that particular
space.
What?
special designated. And
no, so then he says, actually,
agreed to the,
maybe, but now it turns out you need that space after all. So so then, if I remember correctly, that Amar says, in that case, you would still be Potter as well, because as long as you're not moving it, Lutzurko, specifically because you're trying to use the actual Bikkur in itself, then you would in fact be Potter.
Lutzurko
means you want
to
use it. And to use it. And we'll talk about in the Gemara a couple of possibilities. Again, either it means that you want to use, you want to supply, you want to use some of it for supplies, you want to drink some of the wine in it, for example, or it means you want to, for example, use it to climb on. The Gemara starts off by asking, Homani, who is our Mishnah like? This that the Mishnah is making a distinction in the first case where no specific spot was set aside for it, and we're saying that you took it for your own purposes, you took it to use it for some purpose, but then you returned it to any spot, so then there's no specific spot for it, and we're saying that at that point you potter for onus, which Tana would that go according to? That would be Rabbi Shmuel. He's on the labor in and das island, where Rabbi Shmuel says that when you're returning something that you stole, you don't need the das of the owner in order for it to be a valid return. And at that point, you're potter from onus. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, hagoin of tlemina eder, if a person steals a sheep from the flock, the selamina kid, or he steals a coin from a money bag, lamakam shagun of yachtid, divi Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel says it's good enough, you return it to where you took it from, nothing further is needed. Rabbi Akiva, I'm a tzarach das bailam, and Rabbi Akiva says, no, you have to inform the owner. If you don't inform the owner that you returned it, and then something happens, even an onus, it, you're going to be chayev because it's still in your, it's still as if it was in your reshus until you inform the owner. We learned this at the end of Bava Kamma. And in fact, at the end, when we learned this at the end of Bava Kamma, we learned that actually the machloikas is talking about a shomer, which is talking about not necessarily a ganav or gazlan in general, we're talking specifically about a shomer, which actually led, no, we said, actually we said over there in the case of a behemoth that you do have to, that you may have to inform the owner so that he knows to watch it in the future. But one thing is, there is a machlokas rishonim on that then. Does that mean the machlokas is only about a shomer, but with a regular ganav and gazlan, everybody would agree you do have to inform him? Or the other way around, maybe the machlokas is by a shomer and everybody would agree, by a ganav or a gazlan, you don't have to. And by regular Ganav or Gazlan, you don't have to inform him.
This is a Gain of Tula.
A Gain of Tula, yeah, if he steals a sheep, yeah.
So where do we get the Shomer?
Because a Gain of can also mean that he was a Shomer on it, and he decided to Ganav it, to take it for himself. Yeah. So now we have to ask. Okay, so it seems on Mishnah, which is saying you don't have to inform the owner. Once you put it back in the appropriate spot or whatever, then that's it. Your gneva is over and you're back to being a shomer. That sounds like it's according to Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabbi Akiva, you shouldn't be potter if something happens to it afterwards unless you inform the owner first. The problem with that is, Rabbi Shmuel, my ear you lo yuchte after the yuchte nami. In that case, according to Rabbi Shmuel, why is the Mishnah making a distinction between whether the owner set aside a certain spot for it or not? Even if they set out a certain spot aside, as long as you return it to that spot, you're potter. So it shouldn't matter whether yichdu or lo yichdu.
Yichdu means it's replaced in the spot.
Yichdu means it means they set a specific spot, and let's say he put it back in that spot. And lo yichdu would mean they didn't set aside any specific spot. You put it anywhere in your house again. Which Tosfos points out the reason why the Braisa had mentioned two cases, a sheep and a coin, to indicate that Rabbi Shmuel does not really distinguish between those two possibilities. A sheep doesn't have any specific place. A sheep wanders around from place to place grazing. A coin usually stays in a money bag. And so we see Rabbi Shmuel is not making a distinction between something that has a specific spot set aside for it and something that doesn't. So what is the Braisa? So if you're going to say the Mishnah is a coin to Rabbi Shmuel, then how does that fit? Then it was loy miboya karma. Fine, you could say though that the Mishnah is telling us one of these needless to say cases. Loy miboya yichdai. Needless to say, if the owner set aside a specific spot, where then when you put it back in that spot, that's it. You completely undid what you did before. You took it away from that spot. Now you put it back there. Good. Rabbi Shmuel would say in that case you're good for sure. You don't need das bailam. Elafilu loy yichdu. But even if
you have to replace it in the same condition.
Well, we're talking about it in the same condition. Again, we're talking about after you put it back there, it broke, the Mishnah said. And we said you'd be potter. But we're saying, the Mishnah would be saying, even if the owner did not set aside a specific spot, the lav makaymahu, so therefore when you put it back, you're not putting it back in the same place he put it originally necessarily. You're putting it anywhere else in your house. And still loy brain and das violent. Even then, you don't need the das of the owner for it to be considered a valid thing that you returned it, and therefore your chiyuv for it as a gazlan is over and you're back to being the chiyuv of a shogeg. Okay. So far, so good. However, that would be according to Rabbi Shmuel. However, Ema Sefer, but now let's look at the next part of the Mishnah. Yichdula Baila Makab. We said that if the owner did set aside a specific spot, the Tiltal of Adishvara, and then he moved it and it broke. Ben mitef yada ben mishinicha. Whether he broke it while he was handling it or whether after he put it back. Latzurka chayev. If he moved it for his own purposes in order to use it, he's chayev. Latzurka. And if he used it, if he moved it for its purposes to protect it, then he's potter. Ato on the Rabbi Akiva. Now that part seems to be according to Rabbi Akiva. Da'ama da'in and das bailin. Rabbi Akiva says you need the das to the owner, and until you do, you're still chayev. Because what are we saying? That even so, you moved it, litzorko, in order for you to use it, you put it back, and we're still saying you're still chayev if it broke after that because you moved it lachatzila for litzorko. That part can only be according to Rabbi Akiva, because again, according to Rabbi Shmuel, there shouldn't be a difference whether the same spot or whether yeah, okay, so if it was the same spot, so fine, you put it back in the same spot. Only according to Rabbi Akiva would we say that until you inform the owner, your gazlonos is not over. That's the point. The Reisha and the Seifa seem to contradict each other. So the answer is yeah. I saw on the Rabbi Akiva, Dama Jane and Bas Belin Das Bailin. Yeah, then that part is going according. That part is going according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that you need the das to the owner. The problem with saying that part is according to Rabbi Akiva is again the same problem we had with but saying that the ratio is according to Rabbi Shmuel. We have to yet deal with the fact that how can we have a Mishnah where part of it is Rabbi Shmuel and part of it is Rabbi Akiva. Before we get to that part, even we have to deal with something else. The same problem we had with Rabbi Shmuel that he doesn't distinguish between yichdu and lo yichdu. Neither does Rabbi Akiva. When Rabbi Akiva said you need das bailin, he didn't. Again, they were both talking about tleminat eder, the tlemina case, where one has a mokum and one doesn't. And Rabbi Akiva said you always need das bailin. So that's the question. E Rabbi Akiva, my ear yichdu, afilu lo yichdu nami. Again, you have to ask according to Rabbi Akiva why, if he's saying the second part of the Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Akiva, why would it only apply if they set aside a specific spot, afilu lo yichdu nami, even if they didn't set a specific spot? Then, according to Rabbi Akiva, until you inform the owner, you can't say that you're potter. You'd still be chayev for onus, just like any gadlan. And again, we can answer loy mebayakom. Again, we can give the same answer as before. That the Mishnah is telling us the Mishnah is telling us the greater chiddush. Loy mebayak lo yichdu the lav mekaymahu. Needless to say, if they didn't set aside a specific spot, and when you put it back, you're not necessarily putting it back in that specific spot where you took it from originally. So therefore, Rabbi Akiva would say for sure you need das bailin. Because you're not necessarily putting it in any specific space that you can say belongs to the owner. Even if they did set aside a spot, remember Rashi said in the Mishnah that you lent him that spot, which means for current purposes, that is considered his property temporarily. So even you returned it there, and it's still you returned it effectively to the owner's actual rishus. You returned it to a space, which is his actual rishus, and still in a das bailin. But it is temporarily because you lent it to him. And yet, Rabbi Akiva would say, but in a das bailin, that you need to inform the owner, and if you don't inform him, you're still... Rabbi Akiva is being consistent, fine. So far we can say, fine, the first part of the Mishnah is consistent with Rabbi Shmuel's opinion. The second part, and the Mishnah is telling us the greater chiddush, that even if there's no specific spot that you can say this place belongs to the owner, still once you returned it to any spot, then you're possible. The second part would be according to Rabbi Akiva, same idea in reverse. The only problem with that is Reisha Bishmal v'Sefer Rabbi Akiva. So what are you going to tell me? You have a mission over here where the first part is according to Rabbi Shmuel and the second part is according to Rabbi Akiva. It's an odd kind of thing. Okay, but it's an unusual thing. We usually try to shtelein a mission like one Tana. And the answer is ain. In this case, yes, we do have to say that the Mishnah goes according to two different Tanoi. In fact, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, we in fact find that Rabbi Yochanan said, "Man de metalgam lichavis alibed chatana." If there's anybody who can possibly explain to me this Mishnah of chavis, our Mishnah, according to one Tana, according to either all according to Rabbi Shmuel or all according to Rabbi Akiva, I will carry his clothes behind him to the bathhouse, meaning I will serve him like a Talmud serves his Rebbe, or like an Eved serves his master. I'll consider such a person my Rebbe for explaining this to me, because there doesn't seem to be a way to explain it. Well, then some.
Rabbi Akiva was expressing the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel and vice versa.
Nah, but even then, it would still amount to, fine, you could say that Rabbi Shmuel is, fine, you could say, let's say Rabbi Shmuel is expressing his own opinion in the Reisha and the opinion of Rabbi Akiva in the Sefer, it still amounts to the same thing. You still have two different opinions of Tanayim. Okay. So, Tirgama Rabbi Yaakov Ba'aba Kamei Rav, so Rabbi Yaakov Ba'aba explained it in the presence of Rav, that you can explain it, you can explain it according to one Tana, provided, though, you do have to explain that the two parts of the Mishnah are talking about two different cases. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan wanted that somebody should be able to explain it. It's called Chad Tana and Chad Taima, the same case, and it should be according to one Tana, and he couldn't find that possible. Comes along Rabbi Yaakov Ba'aba, and also Rabbi Nosson Ba'aba, as we're going to have, and they explain that you can make it work, provided that you allow that the two parts of the Mishnah can be talking about two somewhat different cases. Namely, Shenot La'amanas L'goyza. Suppose that you took it, suppose that you took the barrel l'chatchila intending to steal it, meaning there was up until well, so like this when yeah in the, it, so in the Reisha like this here let's look at the Rashi Tirgum Rabbi Yaakov Tirgum Rabbi Yaakov, it starts on the last line of the four wide lines on top. The take of kulik chad tana over tre tami, we can make the Mishnah work all according to one tana, but using two different cases. Yes. Namely, Reisha Sheikh Zidul Makaima. The first place is he returned it to its place. And Dechol Makam Sheikh Zidul Makaima. And any place he would return it to is considered its place. Dehala Yechdul Makam, because they didn't set aside any specific place for it. The Sefer Lech Zidul Makam Sheikh Makaima Kimet Masayim Maskana. The second case would have to be when we say that we say Sheinicha does not mean that he put it back in the original spot that was set aside for it, but rather he put it back in some other spot. As the Gemara is going to go on to say when we finish discussing this point. Because when the Gemara is going to finish off in a few lines and say that the Sefer is talking about when you put it in a place that's not its original place, that's going to go on all the various answers that the Gemara is going to offer over you. Because if he put it someplace which is not its original spot, and remember, this is Yichdula Baila Makim, there's a specific spot supposed to be set aside for it. Once he moves it, once he doesn't put it back in that spot, Loi Hab Yechazara, that cannot be considered a valid Chazara. Now, the situation, Rabbi Yaakov would say, is that you took it to begin with in order to steal it. He would explain, that's what the Mishnah means when it says, that you took it for your purposes. Because if you just meant, let's say, to borrow it, to use it for something, like to climb on or whatever, as the Gemara is going to say in a little bit, that would not be considered gzela, according to this way of looking at it, as the Gemara is going to start talking about soon. Then it's good enough, any kind of return. It doesn't have to be returned to the same specific spot. So wherever you put it, at that point, you haven't really done gzela in that case. You're a shoyal shalemidah, as the Gemara is going to say soon. There's one opinion that a shoyal shalemidah is just considered a shoyal. Fine, as long as you're using it, you're a shoyal, you're chayv and oinsin. As soon as you put it down, you're not a shoyal anymore. As opposed to, if we say that a shoyal... Shoyal Ba'alma, yeah, then you just consider a shoyal.
Shoyal meaning without the das of the Ba'al?
Fine, but we're going to have, the Gemara is going to discuss soon, if you're a shoyal shalemi das, if you borrow something without the knowledge of the owner, does that make you a shoyal, which means you chayv and oinsin as long as you use it, but as soon as you put it down, you're not a shoyal anymore, or does it make you a gazlan, meaning you chayv and oinsin until you do a proper hashab, until you do a proper behesham as a gzela? That's the point over here. If you say that he's a shoyal, wherever he puts it, it'll be potter from einsin. But because in this case, Rabbi Yaakov understands that he means he took it l'chatchila in order to steal it, or v'gzela shit v'ksiv v'heishiv, and by gzela the pasuk says you have to return it. So if you put it in the place where the owner didn't set aside to begin with, that's not a proper return. So that these points that Rashi made over here are going to drive much of the rest of the sugya.
Can you say that Zara, like to begin with, there was Exela?
That's the point. If you returned it to the exact spot, Rabbi Shmuel would say that that's a proper Hashava, even if you didn't inform the owner. Rabbi Akiva would not. Because you need Das Island. But again, we did talk about before that maybe Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva are only arguing about a Shomer, but not about a regular Gazlan. Or maybe they hold a regular Gazlan for sure does have to, or for sure does not have to. In which case, our Gemara conceivably could be made to work according to Rabbi Akiva as well. because you could say that even Rabbi Akiva would say you don't need the regular Goslin doesn't need Das Bailim. Fine, if he's taking it, I'm a Nasa Goisla, he's a Goslin. Again, he doesn't need Das Bailim. Yes. But if he returns, again, so Rabbi Yaakov.
He doesn't need Das
Bailim? No, so that's what we're saying. Rabbi Akiva is saying you need Das Bailim, but he says that in the case of a Shomer, we were told at the end of our account. Does that mean he says in the case of a Shomer, and how much more so in the case of a Goslin? Maybe not. Maybe he means only by a Shomer and not by a Goslin. No, because there is an argument, because if it's a shomer who became a gazlan, then at that point the owner, if he knew about it, wouldn't want him to be a shomer anymore. Therefore, he needs a higher level of in order to become a shomer again, he would have to inform the owner. But the point is, if he did know, he wouldn't be a shomer anymore, and therefore to become a shomer again, the owner has to be notified, as opposed to a regular gazlan, maybe not. Okay. Anyway. So the point is, Rabbi Yaakov Abba is explaining Shenotla Manas LeGozla, and the difference between the first and the second part of the Mishnah has to be, in the first part, you returned it to any place, where any place is considered a valid place for it. In the second place, you returned it to some place other than the original spot. Now, Rabbi Yochanan didn't like that, because Rabbi Yochanan wanted to be able to say that both halves of the Mishnah are talking about you returned it to the appropriate place. In the first part of the Mishnah, that would mean anywhere, and the second part of the Mishnah, it would mean that exact spot. You can't make that work with both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, according to either Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. This would fit according to Rabbi Shmuel, yeah, but there are Rishonim who say it would fit according to Rabbi Akiva. And because we just said, because there is a way of looking at it, I believe the Rif says this, for example, that according to Rabbi Akiva, maybe only a shomer has to inform the owner, but a regular gazlan does not. Yeah. Okay. And Tirgumo Rav Nosson Ba'aba Kameh Rav Shenof Lamanas L'Shloach Bayad. Rav Nosson Ba'aba explained in front of Rav somewhat differently that you can say he took it in order to do Shlichus Yad. Shlichus Yad means to misuse a pekodin. Now, you have to ask, what's the difference between Zela and Shlichus Yad? The number of opinions among Rishonim. You have one opinion of the Ritva. The difference is a Gazlan takes something not intending to pay it back. Shleach Yad is taking it intending to pay it back. So let's say he uses some of the wine in the barrel, but he's going to put some more in before he returns it. That's the difference. And yet, the Torah is Mechayavim for Shlichus Yad.
They both have money.
The difference is that the one he's intending to return it, and the other he's not. We're not talking about that kind of Zela, neighbor, if you want to call it that. Fine. The Ran explains differently. The Ran explains that the difference is a Ghana or a Goslin intends to take the whole thing. Shaleach Yad maybe only intends to take a little bit of it, or a vias of it, let's say, or whatever.
Distinction is
a little more accurate. I mean, the Ritva has his shitta, the Ran has his shitta. And Tosfos has yet a third shitta, which also the Ravid holds this way, which is, when it comes to a shomer, it's not even relevant to talk about gneva or gzela. The shomer is standing in place of the owner. His rishus is like the rishus of the owner. It's not really relevant to talk about him being a ganav or a goslin. You can only speak about him being shaleach yad. And that's why we're mentioning shlichus yad over here.
Okay. He stands.
He stands in the,
place of the owner, and as long as he respects his shlichus.
According to the Ran and the Ritva, that is indeed so. According to Tosfos, the very fact that he's been a shomer all this time means that now, if he steals it, it's not really taking it out of the owner's rishus. It's still in the owner's rishus because he's a shomer. Yeah. So therefore, but he can only be chayev mitzad shlichus yad. Okay, let's go on. But my kumufligi, fine. What's Rabbi Yaakov Abba's and Rabbi Nachman's machloekas? Why is one of them saying legoizla and the other one saying shlichus yad? The shlichus yad tzricha chisarin. They are arguing on the point: does shlichus yad require that anything should be missing? When the Torah says that if you're shaleach yad v'pekodin, you become chayev for anything that happens to it, does that necessarily require, that some part of what you had in your possession, that some part of what you were guarding, is now missing? That you took
something.
Has
been used or
has been used? Manda amal goizla, namely the Rabbi Yaakov Abba, who mentioned amanas goizla kasava shlichus yad tzricha chisarin. He holds in order for it to be shlichus yad, something would have to be missing. So if he took it just in order to just in order to stand on it, that wouldn't be considered shlichus yad. Shlichus yad requires that he's taking some of it, in which case we can talk about gzela. Omar Sava, Omandar, the shlichus yad, whereas Rav Nosson Ba'aba mentioned the concept of shlichus yad, kasava, shlichus yad, in its shlichus yad. He holds that shlichus yad doesn't require anything to be missing. Just the fact that you picked it up from one place and put it in another, like our Mishnah said, is enough to make you a shlichus yad.
And that brings a distinction between...
Yeah, that's the difference. That's why we have to say, L'goizlo or L'shloach Bayad, yeah. Okay. Maskefot of Sheshis, however, of Sheshis asks on all of this, You're telling me that he was trying to steal it or to be shaleach the ad or whatever. Midi nafla katani. Did the Mishnah use the word nafla, which would imply that he tried to take it for himself? Tilfala katani. The Mishnah just said that he moved it. Doesn't necessarily imply that our Mishnah doesn't necessarily have to mean to use the content. It seems that he's just using it to move it. Yeah. Elamer of Sheshes. Hacha mayaskin kanchi tilfala habiyala gazolas. So yes, Rav Sheshes says that what it means is, let's say he moved it not in order to use any of the content, not in order to steal all of it or part of it or whatever, but rather just to use it as a ladder, just to use it as a step stool to go and get some young birds. The kasavah shoyl midat shalabidat gazlan habi, which therefore that means that Rav Sheshes holds that if you borrow something without the owner's permission, that makes you a gazlan. So the very fact that he took it. Therefore, he would say the whole Mishnah goes according to Rabbi Shmuel. The Sefer Sheinicha, Machom Sheinim Akoma. The Sefer, now Rashi says this part, the Sefer Sheinicha, is going back on all three opinions that we just mentioned. All of them would say that the second part of the Mishnah is talking that you put it in some place other than the original spot. Because according to all of them, if you hold the Mishnah as like Rabbi Shmuel, doesn't matter. It shouldn't, if you put it back in the original spot, you don't need Das by them and you're good. So we have
the same as Rav Sheshes.
So we have Rav Yaakov Ba'aba saying that you intended to steal it, which means Tosva says, for example, to steal the whole thing, or L'shloyach Bayad, to take part of it, let's say, to pour out some of it to drink, and Rav Sheshes that you're not planning to use any part of it, you're using it to step, you're using it to climb up on.
Point of my number says that if you're standing at the place of the Balavas, so he can do anything wrong by using it to step.
Because the owner wouldn't want you to, because you could break it. So it's still shalich. That's the point. Tosva says you can't be considered a gazlan for it, but you can still be considered a shaleach yad. The Torah tells us that if you're shaleach yad with the kadin, you now become chayev for anything that happens to it. This is shalichus. It may not be considered zela, but it's considered shalichus yad. But the very fact that you're using it, that you're shalel shalemidah, effectively that in and of itself makes you a gazlan. Rav Yechanan, whereas Rav Yechanan doesn't like any of these answers because he holds has to mean you put it back in its proper place, and therefore there's no way to shtalayin the Mishnah according to either or Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva, and that's why
once you put it in place.
No, because according to him, hinicha has to mean, can only mean that you put it back in its original place.
Yeah.
And therefore there's no way to understand it either all according to Rabbi Shmuel or all according to Rabbi Akiva. Okay. Itmar. So now we have this. We mentioned a couple of lines ago this question of shlichus yad, whether it requires there to be anything missing or not. Now we're going to get into that machlokes. Itmar, Rav Levi, chad amar shlichus yad tzricha chisaron, v'chad amar shlichus yad ein tzricha chisaron. One of them says that to fit the definition of shlichus yad, something has to be missing. So in other words, if you were to take the barrel, let's say, and move it in order to climb up on it, like Rav Sheshes said, you would not be considered a shaleach yad. The other one says even then you are. Which one said which? Kistayim, the Rav who d'omer shlichus yad ein tzricha chisaron. We can prove that it's Rav who is the one who said that shlichus yad does not require there to be anything missing. Why? D'tanya, we learn in a braisa. Roya shoya roya ed. Right? Suppose that a shepherd was taking care of his flock. Which is not, when we say his flock, it doesn't mean that it all belongs to him. These are animals that he's watching for different people in town. V'hiniach ed. Right? He left the flock. Ubala here, and he came into the city. Now, we're not talking about that Sam left it carelessly. We're talking about he left it at a normal time when it's normal to leave them to graze in the field by themselves and you go into town for a while. Now a wolf comes and grabs one of the animals, or a lion comes and dirtus. Rashi says the difference is that turdus means he takes the prey with him back to his den, and dirtus means he eats it right there on the spot. In Baba Kama, we learned a little bit differently also that Dirtus means he's alive, and Dirtus means he kills it first, whatever. A wild animal came and killed one of the animals, Potter. Then he's Potter because that's considered an onus.
Well, he left it.
Again, if he left at the normal time, or we're going to have this Gemara again. We're quoting this from later on in our Masechta. Later on, when we're going to deal with it in more detail, but the Gemara is going to give two possibilities. Either it means you left at the normal time, it's normal to leave the animals alone for a certain period of time and go back into town, or it can also mean, for example, that you heard lions roaring and you were afraid and went into town. Whatever, either way, it's considered an oinah, so therefore you're pasur. However, the Braisa continues, if he put his stick or his shepherd's bag on it, then he's chayev. for anything that happens there.
On the animal?
On the animal. Now, Vavenin, so now when we discuss that later on in the Masechta, we wonder about that. We discuss that. What are you telling me? Because one time he put his stick or his bag on it, therefore that makes him chayev to anything that happens, for anything that happens to the animal forever. Hoshakrinu. He took them off afterwards. Yes, but what we're talking about over here is the cases when the animal was, when this sheep or whatever was grabbed by the wild animal, the stick or the bag was still on it. Now, wait, it couldn't escape. No, it could have escaped, but the fact is, because you had your stuff on it, wait. The point is, we're trying to argue that you committed shlichus yad, and once you did shlichus yad, you're chayv anointed. That's where we're in the middle of the discussion. Wait, we're in the middle of bringing the proof that this is Rav's opinion, that shlichus yad does not require chesaron. So, v'chi oydon aleha my habi. Now, we further ask in that discussion, so what if the bag or the stick are still on top of the animal? So what? V'hole moshcha. You didn't do any meshicha. You can't be considered that you did shlichus yad. You can't be considered shlichus yad unless you did some kind of kinyan on it. Unless you picked it up, for example, we're going to learn at the very end of the parak that you picked up the barrel. The Rambam Mishnah mentioned you picked up the barrel. If you just put your stick on the animal, that's not a kinyan. So you can't be considered that you did shlichus yad. The Omer of Shmuel bar Yitzchok Omer Rav. So now here comes the point why we're bringing this in our Gemara, that Shmuel bar Yitzchok says in the name of Rav, she kisha b'mako v'rat telefonim. The case that we're talking about over here is when he put the stick on the animal, he hit the animal with the stick, and it ran in front of him. That constitutes Meshicha. He made it move. Now comes the point why we're using this as a proof.
He kicked the animal. How could he left his bag on his dirt?
So he put his stick on the animal. When he put his stick, he put it on it hard enough to make the animal move. Later on in the day, at this point, it doesn't matter if he took it off or not. At this point, he took him off afterwards. Then he went into town later on in the day when it's normal for him to go. However, by that point, he's committed shlichus yad, and having committed shlichus yad, he's not a shem echidim or shem esafer anymore. Now he becomes a shaleach yad, and now he's chayv in everything, including oinsin. Therefore, when the animal comes and eats it, then he's chayv.
Why is shlichus yad? What did he benefit by putting his staff on there?
He benefited because shlichus yad doesn't necessarily require. Rashi makes it. Rashi makes an important distinction over here. You can't call him a shoyl. A shoyl you can call when you use it in a way that doesn't actually damage it. When animals do work, it weakens them. So even you put your bag or whatever on the animal, it's using its muscles to hold it up. Therefore, that weakens it a little bit. Therefore, that can be considered shlichus yad.
He
hit it with the stick. Yeah, whatever. So we have to ask Vahola Chosra. On the face of it, though, we haven't gotten to that point yet. On the face of it, just by putting the stick on it and nothing is lacking, nothing is lost. Elolav Shmamina Kosava Shlichus Yad and it's Shlichus Sarin. Doesn't that show then that Rav holds that Shlichus Yad does not require anything to be missing? The very fact that you used it as a place to put your stick on, even though nothing further happened, would make you that you were Shaleach Yad. Again, in the case where you use the barrel in order to climb up on, Rav would also say then that's Shlichus Yad. No, the answer is you don't necessarily have to say that because ema shechisha b'mako, because you can understand it differently. Not shechisha, that he hit it with the stick, but shechisha, that he actually weakened it. He hit it hard enough to make it to cause some weakness or whatever. Now there's chesaron.
Temporarily.
Okay. And in fact, dekanami, and in fact, we can prove that from the wording, dekatoni, because after all, the bright, it wasn't really a bright or whatever, it was a statement of Rab, but whatever. That she kisha b'makel said that he hit it with a stick. He kisha implies, Rashi says, implies a hard blow.
Kishui?
No, that's the kisha is the word in the Gemara for a hard blow with a stick. So the very fact that he uses that instead of just shenoth and makle ole or whatever implies that it was actually a hard blow enough to cause some damage.
Wasn't it going away from the line?
Maybe not necessarily that drastic damage. But the point is, once it caused any kind of damage, then already there's a chesaron.
Not necessarily,
yeah.
Would that be classified as mashicha?
Yeah, because he made the animal move because of it. That's mashicha. Yeah.
There's no proof in that.
No, there's no proof that. As a matter of fact, maybe the proof is the other way around. The very fact that Rav used the word hikisha implies that he means that it has to be a chisore. Okay. Shmamina. Okay, that proves it then.
So we accept that
according to Rav, Okay, by elimination then, if Rav is the one who holds it needs chisaron, because we said that's why he used the word makil and he used the word hikisha, then must be Levi sava shlichus yad eretz chisaron. Fine, and by elimination, Levi must be the one who holds that it doesn't. Levi would be the one, for example, who's so Levi would be the one, for example. Levi was a semi-Tana, semi-Amori. He was part of that transitional generation, like Rav. Yeah, he was one of the Talmidim of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Right. So he would hold, for example, again, when we said before, let's say you move the barrel in order to climb on it, he would say that that's Shlichus Yad. Yeah. My time of the Levi.
Yeah,
even though there's no Chisaron. My time of the Levi, fine. What's Levi's logical reason? Why does he say, Taka, that even nothing happened, there's no Chisaron, and yet you're considered a Shlichus Yad? Amr of Yechen, Meshur of Yehisi ben Heroi, like this. Meshuna Shlichus Yad ha'mura b'shem ha'socher, Meshlichus Yad ha'mura b'shem ha'chinam. There is a difference. Now, the Torah mentions the concept of Shlichus Yad twice. By Hashem Achinam, the Torah says that you go to Beis Din, Im Lo Sholach Yadim Im Lechas Re'ehu. And by Hashem Asachar, it says a similar expression. It also says it, Im Lo Sholach Yadim Im Lechas Re'ehu. However, there's a difference. Namely, the difference is that, as the Gemara is going to type, Rashi says it over here, the Gemara is going to type it out soon, that it didn't have to say it by both of them. It could have said it by Hashem Achinam, and we would logically realize that it applies to Hashem Asachar as well. The fact that it said it again comes for a drasha, namely to teach us that Shlichus Yad does not require chisaron. If you only had it said once, you would think the Shlichus Yad is like any other gzela. It needs to be there's a chisaron. Like this, we're being taught that nothing. However, Rabbi Yechon is quoting
out
the name.
In both cases, or just
no, in other words, that once we have, because the Torah repeated, it would mean that in both cases, one teaches us the basic concept of Shlichus Yad, you Shaleach Yad, you become chayiv and everything. The other teaches us that even if that Shlichus Yad did not consist of anything, of any chesaron, you'd still be chayiv.
Both for Hashem
Asachar. One for Hashem, well, both for Hashem Achinam and both for Hashem Asachar. However, Rabbi Yochanan himself says, I disagree with Rabbi Yossi ben Haroi. I say that there's no reason to make that it's not any different. Namely, we did have to say it by both of them.
And therefore we can't
use it to say that it ain't a tzurcha chisaron. So Levi would hold like Rabbi Yossi ben Haroi. Rabbi Yochanan holds differently, and Rav would also hold differently. Yeah. Well, my Mishuna, what do we mean by it's different? What do we mean that it could say one and it wouldn't have to say the other? Like this. Loi term a shlichus yad b'shem asachar. On the face of it, the Torah should not have had to tell the case of shlichus yad by a shem asachar, the case of a shem achinam. We would learn it by a kavach haimer from shem achinam. Yeah. Again, it says by both of them, im l'sholach yodim im l'chas re'ehu, that you have to swear that you didn't do shlichus yad. One, yeah. You would say, u'mashem achinam shepotter b'gnev v'aveda, madach shem achinam, who is potter from... If it was stolen, if it was lost, yet shalach b'yad chayev, and yet by being shaleach yad, it becomes chayev. How much more so? Shem esachah shachayev, named b'aveda, like Hoshkein. Therefore, Rabbi Yossi ben Nehoroi argues, l'may hilchsa katvina rachmana, so why indeed does the Torah go to the trouble of writing it again by shem esachah?
The extra
words teach you that as long as the shlichus yad, even if there's no actual chisaron, it's still considered already. You brought it into your rishus. You're considered a shaleach yad or gazlan, whatever you want to call it, and therefore you're chayav baris. Wait. The halacha is like Rav, that ain't a tzricha chisaron. In general, when there's a machlokas, Rav and Levi, the halacha is usually like Rav. Okay, so that was what Rabbi Yochanan quoted in the name of Rabbi Yossi ben Nehoroi. But Rabbi Yochanan continues, I say that it's not any different, namely the Torah had to tell it to us both times. No, it had to tell it to us both times. We couldn't have learned one from the other. Yeah. We couldn't have learned it yet. And that is Rabbi Elazar. That is like Rabbi Elazar says, "Dama David da Achasi." Where Rabbi Elazar says, "This and this are the same thing." Meaning, the meaning of one is the same as the meaning of the other. There's no extra circumstance. We're gonna see. My David da Achasi. What does he mean? That David da Achasi. What does he mean by that? Means Mishum de Ikel Mifrach. Because you're arguing you can make that Kavachimer if Hashem Achinam is Chayev on Shlichus Yad, how much more so is Hashem Asafer? The problem with that is you could slog up that Kavachimer. Mal Hashem Achinam, Shekain Mishalam, Tashlum Akefu, Matoyan Tainas Ganev. a Shomer Chinam has a Chumrah. Namely, what happens? The Shomer comes to Beis Din and claims the thing was stolen. Now, if he's a Shomer Socher, automatically that's Machayiv and to pay the Karen. A Shomer Socher is Chayiv on Gnevei Avedah. So he just pays the Karen and that's that. It doesn't matter whether his claim is true or whether it's false or whatever, he's never paying any more than Karen. The Shomer Socher. Whereas the Shomer Chinam, what happens if he claims Toyin Kainas Ganev? We make him swear, as usual, if it turns out that he swore falsely, we will make him pay kefal, as we learned in Baba Kama. So, therefore, the Shomer Chinam has a certain chumrah over the Shomer Socher. Namely, there can end up being a case where he pays kefal on Toyin Kainas Ganev. Therefore, there's a certain chumrah, and that once you have a chumrah in Shomer Chinam, the Kav HaChomer falls apart. You could say, fine, usually a Shomer Socher is more chumrah than a Shomer Chinam. However, I can show you a case where a Shomer Chinam is more chumrah. Therefore, by the same logic, maybe a Shomer Chinam,
You don't say Kefal is like the Karen, it's still weaker than the Karen.
That's the Gemara's going to answer that back. Wait. But the one way of looking at it is Kefal is stronger than Karen, so it's double as much, yeah. And therefore, you could argue by the same logic, therefore, fine, so a Shomer Chinam may well be chayev for Shlichus Yad, a Shomer Socher may not be. Yeah. So the Kav HaChomer can be broken up. Yeah. Okay. Oman Deloy Parich, whereas Rabbi Yossi ben Haroyu does not hold of that upshlag, he would say, Sovah, Karna, Beloy Shvua, Adifam Etfele B'Shvua. He says, yes, but the fact that the concept that of having to pay a Keren without a Shvua is stronger than having to pay Kefal with a Shvua. Namely, this that we're saying, that a Shomer Socher, immediately, before he even swears, is automatically Chayev and Keren,
it's stronger than the
case we're saying where Shomer Chinam, if he swears, and it turns out that it's false, because Adim come, that he himself actually stole it, then he pays Kefal, that's a more far-fetched example. So therefore, Keren, without Shvua, it's stronger than that. And therefore, you do have, after all, that a Shomer Socher is more stringent, is more Chomer than a Shomer Chinam. Rava Omar, Rava says actually that so what are we saying over here? We're saying that so far we have, according to Yossi ben Haroi, then you have an extra pasuk to teach us the shlichus yad ein tzricha chesaron. According to Rabbi Yochanan, you don't. Rava Omar, Rava says you could actually say that you can still make the Kav HaChomer in a different way. Even if you hold of that upshlag, even if you hold that Kefal is still stronger than Keren, even though the Kefal is more far fetched than the Keren is all the time, nevertheless, Rava argues you still have a way of making this Kav HaChomer work. And therefore, to say that Shlichus Yad should not need a Chesaron.
So the Keren is stronger than the
Kefal. Let's say even we say that a Keren is stronger than a Kefal.
Right.
We can still make the Kav HaChomer work in a different way. Because, Loi Toma Shlichus Yad, Loi Toma Shlichus Yad, Loi B'Shem Achinim, Loi B'Shem Asachar. Because the Torah did not have to write Shlichus Yad, neither by Hashem Achinim, nor by Hashem Asachar, the case in Mishoyal. Instead, we should be able to learn it only from a Shoyal. Now, by a Shoyal, the Torah does not say anything about Shlichus Yad. A Shoyal, the Torah just says he's Chayim. However,
the Torah doesn't talk Yechal about Shlichus Yad.
Yeah, it does. By Shem Achinim and by Shem Asachar, it does. By both of them, it says the same words, Imla Shalach Yadu and Malach Asrei. But how about by a shoyl? Now by a shoyl, the Torah does not say anything about shlichus yad. By a shoyl, all the Torah is v'chi yishal ishme imre'eu, if somebody borrows from somebody else, v'nishbar emes, and it's broken or dies, which are unsin. But all of enimo, if the owner is not working for him, which we'll learn about in the eighth pedas, the details of that, shalom shalom, then he has to pay. In ba'ol of enimo, if the owner is with him, lo yishalom, then he doesn't have to pay. That's the extent of what the Torah says about a shoyl. Now the point is though, Rashi says, what do we see from that? A shoyl is chayiv and oinsin. Now, what's the logic? Why is a shoyl chayiv and oinsin? Because he has all the hanah. He has all the benefit. He has none of the responsibility. What I mean is he has none of the obligations. In other words, in the sense, he's not paying for it. He's able to use it. So therefore, he has all the benefits. Kol hanah shaloi. Therefore, we give him the highest degree of responsibility, namely he's chayiv even and oinsin. Well, a shaleach yad also is having hanah from the thing. Therefore, once the Torah tells us that a shoyl is chayiv and oinsin, automatically we should understand from that that a shaleach yad is also chayiv and oinsin, because at that point he's like a shoyl. He has all the benefits.
It's cited in the same pasuk.
No, it's not cited in the same pasuk. But the very fact that the Torah tells us a shoyl is chayiv and oinsin, and we can deduce logically that is because he called on our shaloi, that should allow us to deduce the same thing should apply to a shaleach yad. The Torah did not have to say shaleach yad by a shomer chinam or by a shomer socher, and we could have learned it by this by this kind of logic.
Logical.
Okay. Now, Ben Hananel explains differently. What the Gemara means to say is the Torah could have told us explicitly by a shoyl the concept of shlichus yad, and we would learn by a kal v'chomer from that to shem echinim and shem esachar. Namely, we taste him a shoyl. So we would learn shem echinim and shem esachar that they're chayev for shlichus yad from a shoyl. Uma shoyl dildaf bailim kovid, madach a shoyl who his shlichus yad is with the permission of the owner, because he has the right to use it. Right? Him, it's not considered shlichus yad. It's not really shlichus yad. And yet, shalach bo yad chayev, and yet he's using it, and he becomes chayev even for einsin. Shem echinim, the shem esachar, like Koshigin. How much more so a shem echinim and a shem esachar who never had permission to use it? Of course, shlichus yad should make them chayev. Therefore, laman ne'emar. So why would the Torah have to tell us twice, one by shem echinim and one by shem esachar, the concept of shlichus yad? Chad olam olach shlichus yad enet zirchah chisarin. One would be to tell you, like Rabbi Yosi ben Nehoroi is arguing, like Levi in turn is arguing, that shlichus yad does not require chisarin. The idach, and the other one, would be shlotem adaya levom and adin li'es kenadim, because otherwise we know that when you come to using a kavachomer, you limit the application of a kavachomer using the rule called daya. We learned about it in Bava Kamma a great deal. That daya means you can't say that what you're learning out by the kavachomer is going to be any stronger than what you're learning from.
If it's 1 week, then for sure it has to be 2 weeks.
Then by insulting the Eivishter, yeah, she should be out of the machna for 2 weeks. But daya levom and adin li'es kenadim, so therefore we'll bring it back down to 1 week. Yeah. If it weren't for this, Robert's argument, if it weren't for the second time that the Torah tells us shlichus yad, you would think you should apply the rule of daya. Therefore, mashoil the bailam potter. In the case of a shoil, there is an exception that he does not pay, even for insin or anything, if the owner is working together with him, if he himself rented out the owner to work together with him. Therefore, you could argue, fine, shem echinim and shem esachar are chayev in shlichus yad. But let's say they have the owner working for them at the same time, they ought to be potter. The fact, therefore, that the Torah instead tells us shlichus yad a second time comes to tell us don't apply daya over here. Shlichus yad is going to apply to a shem echinim and a shem esachar, whether ba'al of imoy or not ba'al of imoy. Unlike in that sense, they're going to be strong. They're going to be stricter than a shoyl. Fine. Well, the man to omer shlichus yad tzricha chisaron. Fine. What about according to Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, who say that shlichus yad does need chisaron? Hani tarcha shlichus yad lamali. Fine. What do they hold the 2 times that it says shlichus yad for? The answer is chada shleitem a daya levom and adin li'es kenadin. Fine. One they use in order to remove daya like Rav said. The idach, the other one they use l'chadetanya. They use it to teach us what we learn in the following brayse. The pasuk says v'nikra balabayit el elikim. The pasuk says by Hashem Echinam that He comes to Beis Din. Now, the Kim over here means Beis Din, the Dayanim. What does it mean he comes? Now, again, the scenario in the Pasuk is that Hashem Echinim is watching something. He claims that it was stolen. So if the Ganav is found, then he pays double. Im lo yimotze aganav, if the Ganav is not found, v'nikra balabayis el elikim, then the balabayis, meaning the shomer and the original owner of the object, come to Beis Din, and he has to swear, im lo sholach yodi b'malach asrei. And if he swears that, and then it turns out that he's lying, then he pays the capel. Now, what does it mean? Havinikra balabayis elokim means the shvua. It means that they're coming to swear. If he swears that it was stolen, and then it turns out that he's contradicted by Edim, then he will pay the capel. Now, after Omer l'shvua, now you're arguing that imla shalach that havinikra balabayis elokim means that he's swearing. Maybe it just means a din Torah. Maybe as soon as he claims in Beis Din that it's stolen, and Edom come and contradict him, maybe already then, without a Shavuot, he's already chayiv and capable.
No.
By the way, Marsha explains the question of the Gemara a little differently. How do we know b'chlal that Hashem Echinim is potter on Geneva? The very fact that we're saying that he comes to Beis Din, maybe it means as soon as he claims it's stolen, we come to Beis Din and we make him pay. How do we know it means that he swears, which it implies that he, in and of itself, is potter from it? Like this, nemer shlichus yad lamatik and nemer shlichus yad lamayla, because we have the 2 cases of shlichus yad, one by shem echinim, one by shem esachar. Mal halam l'shvua, afkan l'shvua. Just like by the shem esachar, the Torah explicitly tells us that it is a shvua, because by the shem esachar, the Torah uses the expression shvua tashem tia ben shneim, if there a shvua takes place. Afkan l'shvua, so also by shem echinim, it also means that there's a shvua involved. Lamaila means above, meaning in the Shem Echinam, and Lamata means below, meaning by the Shem Esachar, the next piece. Yeah. And therefore we learn from that that only if you swore on the Turntinus Ganev are you going to be chayiv in the case. Tosfos said the other opinion would say, okay, there's other psukim in the pasuk that you could use for that Zeta Shava as well. Okay. There are, but the maskana is anyway, so we have two different ways of looking at it. Again, the halacha is like that, as it usually is, that shlichus yad ain't a tzrichus isarim.